This is Greg Olson, inviting you to check out my new Blue Wire podcast, TE1, where I interview tight ends throughout the history of the NFL who have helped revolutionize the position. TE1 is presented by the Chevy Silverado. The Silverado is all about grit. It's strong and dependable, exactly like playing tight end. Just like the incredible players we sit down with on the podcast, the Chevy Silverado is in a league of its own. Strong, advanced, and dependable. Download TE1 today, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Blue Wire.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! It's over! It's over! Cleveland is a city of champions once again!
The Cleveland Cavaliers select Colin Sexton, Darius Garland.
Here comes Sexton, some rhythm.
And he got it, young boy!
Do you know what the Cavs fans are calling the Darius Garland, Colin Sexton backcourt?
What?
Sexland.
Oh, that's good.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. With me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
Well, Justin, I didn't really tech this one out as well as I can, so I'm thrilled to see levels coming up from both me and you on the stream. And, you know, I think that's a win for all of us.
Well, thank you for not botching this. I really do appreciate that because we are in the middle of probably one of my favorite playoff runs, at least for one that the Cavs aren't in. It's been just a great time watching, and we got a great guest to help break it down. From ESPN, it is George Sedano. George, how are you doing today?
What's up, guys? Good to be here. Hope everyone is healthy, safe, and sound.
Staying healthy so far. I'm usually very prone to getting sick, so this whole staying inside and not getting sick for maybe 6-7 months is blowing my mind. I do have a question. So with these playoffs, obviously you have ties to both Miami and LA. Does that factor kind of make this a little more special for you? Like, are you enjoying it that much more?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, if the Clippers hadn't screwed things up, it'd be even more interesting, I think, for me, just like from a professional and just personal standpoint, right? Just for enjoyment. But yeah, it's great because obviously the Lakers, you know, are a team I cover every day. I've become very fond of not only just the team, but the people there that work there. I deal with them very regularly. And obviously I go way back with the Heat. I mean, for the love of God, I feel like Pat Riley is, should be at my kids' birthday parties and stuff like that. I've known him for that long, you know?
He is, incidentally. He's a really, really good guy.
Yeah. He only showed up the one time. You know, he was busy the other times.
Oh, okay. That's gotcha. Fair. Gotcha. It's, it's such a weird playoff for me. I mean, obviously it's a weird playoff, but the interesting thing.
No, for mostly is, for you.
These,
but why is it mostly weird for you? Because the Cavs aren't around. Like the Cavs, let's face it. Outside of those LeBron years, there haven't been a lot of great Cavs runs. You know what I mean?
That is fair. I mean, I like to think that the Cavs changed the NBA. We just had such a long run there. But no, it's weird because these are teams I don't normally gravitate to, but I find them all incredibly likable. I think at times Heat culture, as you're wearing the culture shirt. Been something I've rolled my eyes at. It's you go back to the decision and it's okay, how much is it the culture and how much is it three super friends wanting to play together? And I mean, I'd argue LeBron didn't fully buy into Heat culture until he lost in 2011. But seeing them do it this way with Jimmy Butler, seeing Denver build such a legitimate team the way they've done it, Boston has a likable team. It's all these teams are kind of selling themselves to me, which I didn't really expect going in.
Yeah, look, in regards to Miami, I think that the culture is really just the standard that Pat Riley set when he walked through the door on September 2nd, 1995. Like, that's the reality of it. He came and brought instant credibility and accountability, right? That hadn't been there for an expansion franchise. Okay. They'd been around 7 years at that point. I think people forget that part of it. And look, he bumped his head against the wall literally and figuratively at times. And over the years, he's just made it work. Now, look, he's had great mentors, right? Jerry West, guys like that, go big or go home, right? Like his, I guess, learning curve with the Lakers really has made his time in Miami what it is, right? Just understanding what it is to have this kind of excellence and expected excellence, right? And mm-hmm. that's what he tried to create in Miami from nothing, you know? So as much as people roll their eyes at it, if you look at what they've been able to accomplish basically since Dwayne Wade was drafted, you know, 17 years ago, I mean, it's up there with pretty much any of the other organizations. Like outside of the Spurs, no team has made the conference finals more in that stretch. Or actually, you can go back to 2000 even. You know, there's something to be said about that and what Pat has created from nothing.
Mm-hmm. So something I'm kind of curious about is, and this is probably putting the cart before the horse a little bit, is, you know, obviously these conference finals still need to play out, but do you think that there's something a little special for the Heat organization to come back winning this particular way, the way that they've been winning? As you know, because I know Pat Riley has a pretty long memory. I don't think it probably felt good to be left. How do you think their organization feels about this particular run?
Oh, I think they feel great about it. Look, there was no way they thought this would be the result. I think they did want Milwaukee at some point. I think they felt like if they got that matchup that they felt really good about it. And clearly we saw that play itself out. I don't think they had conference finals and finals necessarily on the radar, but they thought maybe they could have a shot if something came about and the pieces fell in place properly. And look, a lot of things had to go right for them. There's a lot of luck involved here, including the Jimmy Butler part of it, right? Like, let's start with that, where, you know, him in Philadelphia has to not work out for a multitude of reasons, right? Houston was very much interested in Jimmy Butler, and there was talk about the deal basically being done with Houston. And then Miami came into the fold, something he had certainly been intrigued by, according to his agent, for a long, long time. And it just happened to work out. And it also helped kind of the progression of some of their young players. We've seen a crazy ascension from Bam, obviously, where now, I mean, hell, you guys tell me. I look at him, he's a top 15, 20 player, and I don't even think that – I think I'm being kind, potentially, at even 20. Like, I think it's – he seems fairly cemented even in the top 15 at this particular point.
Yeah, he really is one of the most high-impact players. And it's interesting to see that – in a time where everyone kind of said the center position is dead, you basically have three guys on these teams with Bam in Miami, Jokic, and I'm going to count Anthony Davis there.
Yeah,
I think if sure. he's drafty, he's a center. Sometimes you could argue they're playing two center lineups. But it's interesting to see each of those guys playing that position a different way, but still making it a big impact. Do you think it's going to cause teams to kind of reevaluate the way they feel about that position? Or is it still yes. going to just be the mentality of, oh, you can't take those guys in the top 5 or 10?
I think that it's sports, professional sports are copycat leagues. And I think that people see a certain thing work and they try to recreate that. Now, look, can you find another Bam Adebayo? Maybe, right? There's allegedly a kid in this draft that people are talking about that could go in the lottery. That has a similar skill set. Now, again, I don't follow the college game as closely as I do the NBA game, and especially because we didn't get one, or it didn't finish at least. And by the time I'm generally watching, it's usually come tournament time. So usually February conference tournaments is where I start to kind of focus in because we start to figure out who's going to be drafted.
It's worth watching.
Right, exactly. So this is the class I'm least familiar with maybe in my entire life, to be honest with you. But
in all fairness, we've heard that from draft guys too. Like we had Jonathan Wasserman on, and he's like, man, it's weird. Like this is just a weird, weird draft year.
For sure. So I think that there will be teams that will try to duplicate that, you know, and I think that some will be able to make it work. And honestly, I think that what the league needs is different approaches, right? I don't think all of us doing the same thing is healthy for the league, right? Because I mm-hmm. think that styles make fights, right? And if you have teams with different styles, who, you know, one team's strength could be the team's weakness, right? Like, and you have real significant differences between those two, I think it makes the sport more intriguing that way. When everyone's trying to be the Warriors or the Rockets or whatever, I don't think it's as fun that way.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad you brought up that point because that's been something that we've been looking at. I mean, from a cast standpoint, obviously we're in a long break, but you look at why these teams have been successful. And it was something I had said even going into this season that I think fans are going to need to see it in the playoffs, where all of a sudden matchups start mattering again, seeding starts mattering again, all these things that kind of regular season conversations that had died are starting to become relevant again. And the other nice thing too is you have teams that have built their teams in different ways. And a thing I really respect about Miami is going from having no cap space, going to investing with the wrong guys, acknowledging that mistake and turning it around so quickly, developing the players that they have, getting Jimmy Butler without any cap space. I mean, Josh Richardson's a nice player, but they've really, really impressed me with how they've done things. And it's kind of changed my mentality. I no longer am in the Ricky Bobby camp of if you're not first, you're last. So you should tank or be a contender. I think you can grow from the middle, and Denver and Miami are great examples of that.
Yeah, Justin, look, the Celtics are a good example of that too. Let's not forget, you know, when Brad first took over, they were a 500 ball club. You know what I mean? And they were able to kind of cultivate talent to put themselves in the position that they're in too. So, and look, it's not a knock against the Sixers. I was very much in the Sixers camp, right, when Hinkie was there. And I know that that was a super controversial time in the NBA and amongst NBA fans. But I do think that the mistake that Philly made, you know, since we're going to go that, you know, talking about just the different contrasting styles and how to build a roster, the mistake that Philly made was hiring Elton Brand. And I don't mean that to be a jerk. I'm just saying, like, he didn't have any experience.
Yeah.
So, you know, Colangelo has that super embarrassing situation happen with him and his wife and those burner accounts or whatever. But, you know, say what you want about Brian. Brian had a track record of at least building good teams, right? He had the experience of doing that. And again, he had hits and misses, like pretty much everyone does for the most part. But I think that when that happened and Elton took over, you had a situation where that roster continually got worse around their two best players. And so much so where, you know, it was ballyhooed that they traded for Glenn Robinson III and Alec Burke, I believe.
Not like, by this podcast.
like they were some sort of saviors to space the floor. You know what I mean? And it, like, you look at them and they're like, okay, they're okay shooters, but they're not what I look at as marksmen, right? Like you look at Miami and they've got Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero and, you know, all these guys that can shoot. The Jay Crowder stuff is still weird to me. The fact that
it's weirder for us, trust me.
Yeah. It's way weirder for us, George.
Yeah, I bet. But generally, they've built good spacing around their best players who don't space the floor, right? And Jimmy and Bam. And I think that that's kind of it, right? So I think that there are a million different ways to build a roster. And for some people, tanking may work. For other people, building from the middle may work. But again, just like I brought up earlier, I think that it is a copycat league. I think people see what works for other teams. They try to do that. Denver is an example. Miami is an example. And Boston is an example of that. And I'm sure there's numerous more that I can't think of off the top of my head.
Part of me is starting to wonder, and you know, I think so much of like whether the results of these playoffs are legitimate or not, or indicative of the larger reality or not. And I know we're going to talk about that later, but if these results are accurate, I kind of wonder, George, and I'm curious what you think about this. Is this kind of the end of the hyper-focusing on the arms race portion of team building? Because, you know, the Warriors kind of broke our brain where it was just get talent, get talent, get talent, get talent. And it didn't matter how you got it because it's just like the scales were so tipped that you almost had to eschew team building just to like, let's just get the best players that we can. And now we have a Heat, a Nugget, a Celtics team, all that mostly homegrown, mostly, you know, not the top tier talents. I wonder if maybe the pendulum might swing back the other way too. No, you actually need like 9 players who can play.
I think it'll be somewhere in the middle. I still think there are going to be teams that are going to be like, oh, Giannis, come listen to us in our pitch, right? And yeah. Add that type of talent, right? Whether it's the Warriors or the Heat or the Raptors, you know, or whoever, right? I think that there's still going to be that. But I do think that player development, to your point, is a huge key. It's like the NFL in a lot of ways, where you have to hit on undrafted guys, right? You have to hit on these late round picks. You know, it's not just about the lottery guys and the free agent guys. You have to find guys that fit, and you have to find all the diamonds in the rough. Miami's been excellent at that. Miami, Toronto, and San Antonio historically have been excellent at that. And you look at guys, you know, I can tell you as far as the Heat are concerned, I mean, I can go back to when Pat first started, right? And they found guys like Anthony Carter and Ike Austin. And, you know, those aren't household names, but those were guys who were seventh or eighth men in a rotation on teams that were going deep in the playoffs, right? Mm-hmm. And you find the same situation now. And you find deals that you can make that can add to your depth, like Miami did this year with Jay Crowder and Andre Iguodala, right? And they trade out Justice Winslow, and they somehow get off Deion's contract, right? Mm-hmm. But I think that you can do both. I don't think that there might be a way for, I think, the smaller market teams to go about it, which is maybe the team building helps them, right? San Antonio, granted, got lucky with Tim Duncan, but the rest of that roster, post David Robinson, was built late in the draft on, you know, minor free agent pickups, undrafted type guys, right? Guys that fit their quote unquote culture. So I do think that there is a recipe there, but I don't think it has to be the same for everyone. I think that the large market teams are still going to chase every whale and free agent that's out there, and they're going to try to build their teams that way. But the smart ones will also have a culture where they utilize their G League team, where they utilize their scouting department to find guys, you know, in the smallest, you know, nooks and crannies of the basketball world, right? So I think all of that is important. I don't think there's one area where you can just eschew it and say, ah, it doesn't matter. No, all of it matters now.
Right, and I also think the key, one of the changes is that the draft lottery odds change. So the tanking strategy, you're no longer pretty much guaranteed a top four pick. You have the worst record in the league. It's only a 14% chance at number one. So I think you're going to see more and more teams say, okay, you know what? Let's just develop the talent we have. Let's try to build accountability. Let's try to build a winning culture. And we can use these guys we develop to consolidate talent, to chase a star like Toronto did. I think where teams in the middle get in trouble is when they get too dedicated to their one little group. Like I think Portland took the wrong gambles when they had cap space, and that kind of limited their ceiling. One question I have.
Well, and they traded for Hassan Whiteside.
I was a little scared the Cavs were going to do the same thing to get off.
I believe that's a vote. I believe that's vote getter for Defensive Player of the Year, Hassan Whiteside.
Yeah, yeah. Him and Andre Drummond. One question I have. So in my mind, I feel like Denver should be the answer to this, but who is the biggest overachiever in the playoffs? Because Denver feels the most surprising just because of the market they're in, but Miami doesn't have that top 10 consensus player that Denver has in Jokic. Do you think Miami's the biggest overachiever in the playoffs?
Yeah, because I feel like Denver, you know, we've seen kind of the slow progression, right? Mm-hmm. And then building, right? Where, you know, they win that 7-game series last year, right? Where everyone against San Antonio, and people are like, oh, they're coming. They're on the rise, right? Like, so you could kind of see them coming a little bit. Whereas Miami, unless you were a diehard, right? You didn't see this coming. You maybe when they got Jimmy, you said, okay, they're a playoff team, right? But what are they really? Like, what are the rest of those parts look like? And so I think they're the bigger surprise, because no one expected Tyler Hero to be what he's been in the playoffs, right? He dealt with a lot, you know, injuries in the second half before the restart, but he had some moments. But man, I know it's the bubble, right? And there's no fans. And so it's really hard to quantify how he would do in a normal scenario. But I'll tell you this, like the guys on that team were talking about him not being afraid of the moment during the regular season too. And he was still their third leading scorer in the fourth quarter, behind Jimmy and Goran. So I think that there was something to be said about him just being good in those moments regardless. But yeah, I think it's the Heat just on that. Like they have it's a lot of guys who were spare parts in some places, cast-offs, you know, guys who still, we didn't know what their ceilings were, and Jimmy Butler, right? So it was a mishmash of stuff. We knew they had an elite coach, right? So I felt very strongly that they would be a top four seed because I thought Eric would be good enough to get them there. But once the playoffs started, I felt like it needed to be matchup based. And look, maybe that's what it's been. But I think it shows that it's more than that now, the way that they've been able to come from behind in so many of these games.
I think that the reason it's the Heat on top of all those reasons, George, is that they're not your traditional team that kind of punches up, where a guy like Jokic and a guy like Murray, they just go up another level in a way that no one was expecting.
Right.
Someone different from the Heat kills you every single game. Because there are games where they win where Jimmy has 12 points. They have games where they win where Bam has 9 points. I think that is what kind of is crazy to me about this run that they've had, is most of those teams that don't have any one guy every time in the playoffs, like, you kind of tend to like key those guys out after a while. And that hasn't been the case. Why do you think this Heat team, frankly, is still able to score at the level that they've been scoring? Because I kind of expected some of this to get snuffed out in the postseason.
It's really a testament to Eric, you know, and I think Spo, look, basketball dorks like us know how good he is. But there are people who are still kind of, you know, they still kind of shrug their shoulders like, you know, anyone could have won LeBron, Wade, and Bosh. They could have won those titles, which I always feel like is ridiculous, because if that were the case, Del Harris would have been the coach of the Lakers for a really long time with Shaq and Kobe, right? And Phil would have never needed to have come in. So I do think coaching matters, at least as a difference maker, right? And I think Eric is a legit difference maker. I think from game to game, there are very few coaches in the sport that make better adjustments than him. And we saw that when he had LeBron, Wade, and Bosh. And now we're seeing that again here in this particular situation. And he's gotten more with less, or more out of less, than almost any coach we've seen in the last, 6 years, whatever it's been since LeBron went back to Cleveland. Because those rosters were not good, as you illustrated earlier. They signed all the wrong guys. Really, the only guy left is Kelly Olynyk, and that's still not a great deal, but they get the most out of him, in the situation that they're in, and they utilize him properly. But it's Eric. Eric gets them the looks. Eric has and that group has cultivated Duncan Robinson into this ridiculous weapon, who shot 46% this year on catch and shoot threes. He broke Klay Thompson's record. That's for single season. And the other four guys, by the way, behind Duncan Robinson, are all Klay Thompson and Steph Curry on those lists. So, you know, this was a guy who played, 120 minutes 2 years ago. And now, you know, he had third most threes in the sport. So that's coaching. You know, I don't care what anybody tells you. And that, you know, that itself, right? And just really knowing how to push buttons, I think. And that's the one area where I think Eric has gotten so much better. Is, for example, in game two, you know, the Heat were trailing, as has been customary in this postseason. And right before the second half, he comes to Bam and he's like, "Hey, can I talk to you for a second?" And Bam's like, "Yeah, what do you need, coach?" And he's like, "You know what I need? I need the all defensive team, Bam, to be here in the second half. Can you do that for me?" And he's like, "I got you." And it was literally just like that, as calm and cool as collected as that conversation was, as I just related to you, that's how it went. So I just think it's him. Like, he is really, really good. And even the people who maybe doubted him before, my buddy Dan Dockich, who I did a summer league game with last year, and we ended up going into a first take segment in the middle of a summer league game about Eric Spoelstra and the best coaches in the league. My guy Keyshawn Johnson, who hosts the morning show on ESPN Radio now, for years when he worked in LA with me, he'd be like, "I don't think Spoelstra is that good." He literally called me on my show and said, "George, I need you to shut up for a second because I need to apologize to you." And I'm like, "For what?" And he's like, just shut up. And I'm like, "For Spoelstra?" And he's like, "See, this is why I don't work with you anymore, because you can't even let me apologize to you." So many people doubt him. And I just think that he is on a different level right now. Look, when Brad is giving you the type of props that he's given you before the series, and look, I think Brad is right there, you know, top 3, 4, 5 coach. You're splitting hairs with those guys up there. I think it's Eric. Eric is the secret sauce, man.
I completely agree. I don't think anyone's coaching better than him right now. And I think people forget that coaches can have good and bad games, up and down times. But
sure,
without a doubt, he is the difference maker. And if you guys are looking for a difference maker for your business, our sponsor, Indeed.com, as you covered. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world, because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other job sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need. You can pause at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job posts, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Right now, go to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through September 30th. Carter, who else is helping us out today?
Our dear friends at BetOnline, Justin. The wait is finally over and football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props. My bookie doesn't take player props anymore, so I'm going to need to sign up with BetOnline. BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day or day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget the promo code BLUEWIRE at BetOnline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
By the way, can I jump in there and just talk about what a seamless segue that was by you, Justin? As a radio person, I am very proud. I thought that was really impressive. And then you just, the easy toss over there to Carter. That was fantastic work by you guys.
Thank you. Justin, you're actually, you're keeping up with the spirit of our podcast because we always like to talk about our ad read after and kind of like do an on-air kind of workshop and discuss.
Which is where we kind of lose the professionalism.
Oh my God, though. That was great. I am really impressed. A plus there. Excellent.
Thank you very much. All right. Moving back to the conference finals, let's be honest, George. Hindsight is king when it comes to the NBA analysis. Does how we perceive this bubble and how legitimate this bubble is depend on how good Miami and Denver are next year? Because I feel like if they take a step forward, people are going to say, oh yeah, look, this is clear. They were on a line, they were on an upward trajectory, and they ended up being legitimate. I feel like if they take a step back or don't improve, people are going to say, ah, those were fluke runs, and it'll kind of minimize some of what they've done, fairly or not.
I think that as long as they are, because look, there are going to be teams that get better, right? Like in the East, Brooklyn's going to be way better, right? We're under the assumption that that's the case as long as those two guys are healthy in KD and Kyrie, right? So, you know, the East is going to be different. I'm curious to see what Toronto looks like, right? But to your point, yes, I think that as long as Miami and Denver are at least in the second round, and let's say they lose in like a 7-game battle against like a crazy good opponent, you know, look, maybe that, look, there's always going to be people that crap on somebody anyway. That's just the world we live in these days. But I think that much like Toronto, right, you look at them, I look at that as a successful title defense for a team that lost Kawhi Leonard, right? And considering teams around them got better too, right? So I think that people who are reasonable will think one way, and people who are unreasonable will just think unreasonably. That's just kind of how this works. But I do think Denver, though, has a – man, I have been really big on Denver for a while, basically since they drafted Michael Porter Jr., because I've always felt that as good as Murray and Jokic are, they need a guy who can be the primary scorer, and good God, can he be that? I don't think there's any question that he has the tools to do it. I think defensively he leaves a lot to be desired still, and if he can just become competent on that side, man, I think the ceiling for that team can be really, really high. With Miami, we know their strategy. They're building this team. Next year they want to see if they can kind of match the intensity, right? Hopefully Hero gets better, Bam gets better. But they're fishing for the offseason. Like, we know what they're fishing for. And they're fishing for another, you know, big-time free agent, which will then propel them back into a different stratosphere in their eyes. So I do think that some will judge based off next season, and that could be a barometer. But I think really what you have to do is look at teams over the span of a 3 to 5 year stretch to really determine – how much they've grown. I mean, I think that's the most reasonable approach to take.
I do think that ultimately, you know, I kind of expected the drum beat to be louder, that these runs were a little fluky even in the moment. And I actually think that, to Justin's point, I don't even think, even if both teams underperform wildly next season, that that's going to be the case, because we kind of crystallize these things in the moment and how we talk about it. And I think for whatever reason, that hasn't been a part of the conversation. I haven't seen almost any asterisk talk other than like way down the line asterisk talk, like we just started here. Why do you think that is?
I think because most basketball fans, most, I say, right, are fairly reasonable people. They follow the sport regularly. So they've seen the ascension of Denver. They understand what Miami is founded upon, right? Like, and I think that has helped temper some of this. But there's going to be that, right? Like, there are people in my line of business, right, in my line of work, who live on the take, okay? And the hotter, the better, right? So there's going to come a time that if these teams have some sort of injury next season or they're not performing up to snuff, that someone out there is going to be, you know, giving you a tease on their radio show or TV show that goes something like, coming up next, why the bubble teams were a fraud, you know, and you're going to get that. And that's just, and you just deal with it and you just kind of roll your eyes about it. But there will be some of that, like, let's be real. But I think that, you know, a lot of it depends on what you populate your circle with, right? And I think that's just a metaphor you can use for any aspect of life right now, is that we kind of live in these silos. I don't necessarily think that's healthy. Although sometimes the noise gets so loud, depending on what it is we're talking about, that sometimes it's easier just to detach and stay in those safe silos, you know, whether it's sports or not. But look, there's always going to be people that are going to play the carnival barker, and you just have to kind of deal with that. But I just think people are smarter. The consumer is smarter. And we've seen that with baseball over the years too, where I think the consumer who watches baseball is smarter than most of the other sports, because their sport is super dorky, right? There's a million stats for a million different things. And I think basketball is kind of trending in that direction. And much like the three-point revolution has changed the game for basketball, and some people say for the worse, kind of like what we were discussing earlier about, you know, everyone's playing the same style and it's not as interesting, including people like Greg Popovich, right, who has said that on the record. You know, baseball, there are people that will say the same thing about the shift and things like that. So I just think that the consumer of this particular sport is pretty wise to what's going on. And, I would say the same for the diehards in the NFL. I just think that there are more casual fans to a sport like that than there are maybe to basketball and baseball at this point.
Yeah, I definitely agree. There's one aspect of the bubble that I think isn't going to be sustainable, and that's the shooting. And we know that players, like, they'll hit everything in practice, they'll hit everything at the Y, or when you see them do these pickup games. And we always say, okay, well, at NBA speed against NBA defense, that shooting's going to drop off. Is it really that the arenas are just that bad when it comes to sight lines? Like, I feel like the sight lines have really just changed everything. And I mean, some parts of it is also just kind of the fact that you don't have the crowd to feed off of, and that eliminates maybe some pressure for some guys. Although I think as the games go on, that pressure builds naturally, that you're just that the level of competition. But do the sight lines, are they actually that bad in arenas?
Some of them are. Yeah, I would say that some of them are, as someone who spends, you know, at least 30 to 35 nights in an NBA arena somewhere on a sideline, and, you know, having to try to watch the game and getting on the floor before games and kind of like checking things out and talking to guys. There are some places that are worse than others. And it's kind of why I wish I was in the bubble, because that's the story I would love to do right now, is just really talk about that. Because you're right, the shooting is off the charts, and maybe it is the lack of a crowd, but I do think that there's been enough talk from players and people around the league about the sight lines that I do think that that is a real thing, and that's something that I don't think is sustainable, because not every arena is going to have those pretty of views when you're looking at the basket.
You know what's funny about that is it feels like the people who have been the most beneficial or have gotten the most benefit from the three-point arc, because it's not like just everyone's great. all of a sudden. Right. There are guys. I feel like those fringe off the dribble guys, like the Jamal Murrays and the Goran Dragics of the world that like to pull off the dribble. It feels like those guys just do not miss in this bubble environment.
Yeah, they've been fantastic for sure. And look, your boy Jay Crowder, we kind of alluded to him earlier. Look, I still think it's a little fluky. You know, I don't know if I'm expecting him to be a 40% shooter beyond this season, but I think they'll take it. But yeah, like that, I think it is those guys specifically. But I think that everyone seems to be benefiting from it, right? Just in general, which is why when you see, you know, like we saw in this last game, a team like Miami, who was second in the regular season in three-point shooting and second in the bubble and in the playoffs, shoot as poorly as they did, you kind of sit there and you say to yourself, yeah, that's probably not going to happen in the next game. They won't shoot as poorly because we've just seen even bad teams are shooting well in those particular arenas.
Yeah, I totally agree. Now, we've talked about Miami and what they're doing in the East. This kind of feels like almost a karma flip for LeBron, what happened in 2015. Like, I really do feel like this is kind of not, it's not an easy path. Like, I still think Denver is going to continue to put up a fight. I think whoever comes out of the East is going to be a very real challenge and a real threat to win it. But he has to smell blood in the water at this point, right? Like, this is probably the best shot he's ever going to have at that fourth ring.
There's no doubt in my mind. Look, I've been saying this even before the bubble. Like, if you're LeBron, you got AD now, you're the only team with two top five players, okay, on the roster that are healthy at the moment, okay? Because I never felt Paul George was close to that particular stratosphere, right? I think you can make the argument he's top 10, top 15, but there's a difference there. And I think because of that, and because the Warriors will be back next year, right, in some way, shape, or form, and I think they're going to be at least a playoff team. I would be stunned if they weren't, you know, in that top four or five range.
I think health is going to be the only thing that stops them.
For sure.
Top out.
Yeah. I mean, look, if Andrew Wiggins can be Harrison Barnes – right? Like, that's not a high bar to clear, right? Yeah. Like, I'm not trying to knock Harrison Barnes. What I'm saying is Andrew Wiggins was a number one overall pick, right? So Andrew Wiggins should be better than Harrison Barnes, who is a good player in the NBA. He should be, in theory, closer to an elite level player, and we haven't seen any semblance of that in his career. So if he can just be that, I think the Warriors are going to be good. But the Warriors are going to be good. I mentioned Brooklyn earlier, right, on the east side. Teams are going to be better. You know, who knows where Chris Paul goes?
LeBron's going to be older. It's got to matter something.
That's the other part, right? LeBron is 3 months away from being 36 years old, and he's going to be 36 when the season starts because you heard Adam Silver tell Bob Costas that they're definitely not starting until January. I think that's even a bit presumptuous. I would be surprised if it got started in January.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's gonna. Father Time eventually grabs us all. Even LeBron James, cyborg. Okay, like even him he'll eventually succumb to Father Time. So yeah, and AD. Okay, look, Anthony Davis. I think it's overstated how many times he's been injured because a lot of it is fluky little things. But he hasn't been a bastion of health by any stretch of the imagination, right? So I do think that plays a role in it. And you're right. He's got to smell blood. There is not a team in his path that has any real tangible experience. I know Miami's got some guys, right? Like Udonis Haslam, but he doesn't play, right? Andre Iguodala plays sparingly. You know, at most, he's getting 20 minutes in a particular contest, right? So I think that, you know, he's got such a great opportunity in front of him. He's going to be a heavy favorite to finish this series off against Denver. And I'm with you. They're going to fight. But I don't think, you know, barring an injury to LeBron or AD, that they're going to even come close to winning this series. I think that maybe they get a game or two. But, you know, Miami and Boston present some challenges, but not challenges they can't overcome. Mm-hmm. And I think what we've seen from LeBron, where we hadn't seen this before, right, because – And give me a minute here to kind of just expand on this thought. LeBron is an active participant in the growth of Anthony Davis. And it's not to say that he hasn't been with other guys. But look, in Cleveland the first time, he was a kid, okay? We all know that. Then in Miami, he was an equal, right? He was peers with Wade and Bosch, and they brought in veteran guys that he respected, and Battier and Mike Miller and Udonis and Ray Allen and those type of guys, right? Mm-hmm. Rashard Lewis or whatever, right? Birdman. Like, those guys, they all felt like they were, to some extent, equals, right? At least whether it was from an experience standpoint, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. LeBron was clearly the best player. Everyone knew that. But even LeBron needed, you know, a little pat on the back from Dwayne Wade to be like, yo, if we're going to win this thing, like, you need to be the best guy, you know? And there's that, you know, infamous Bahamas trip that they took. And Dwayne was like, you got to be the guy. Like, I'll take the secondary role. Let me figure that out. And they did, you know what I mean? And then when he came back to Cleveland, conquering hero, he brought kind of a standard, right? We all remember that game in Portland with Kyrie and Dion. And that mess that was created in that contest, Dion wasn't around much longer, if I recall correctly, after that.
Yes.
But it felt like with Kyrie that they weren't equals, right? And with Kevin, they weren't equals either, for that matter. And I think that with Kyrie specifically, it was your turn, my turn. And there was some of that with Wade the first year, but then you could see the chemistry, you know, when they were on the floor, Dwayne cutting to the basket, you know, he became really good at cutting towards the basket and just kind of changed his game. I remember Tom Haverstraw at the time did a story about Dwayne Wade's gravity, and he had the best gravity in the sport, or a top 10 gravity in the sport, but yet he couldn't shoot threes, right? It was the strangest thing ever. But now with the Lakers, right, at this stage of his career, as he's gotten older, he arrives in Los Angeles with a bunch of kids, right? He made the comment once that, you know, they asked him, how do you relate to your teammates? And he's like, well, you know, they have some things in common with my sons. And it was just like, whoa, like, this is Daddy LeBron to the umpteenth level here now, all of a sudden. And by the way, for those that don't know what Daddy LeBron is, when I used to host the NBA Lockdown podcast with Amin El Hassan, when he returned to Cleveland, conquering hero, we used to call him that, Daddy LeBron, because, you know, he would teach these young kids how to win a championship, because
he was playing no defense.
Kyrie was a real
terrible habits.
Everyone else, though, had to abide by the culture, okay? Yeah. That he
which
had
more
he
like had which is more like most dads than you think. So
yes, exactly. So, but in LA, then they get Davis, and he realizes, hey, I need this guy. And LeBron, man, I don't know how to quantify this, right? Like, what has he lost athleticism wise? A quarter of a step, maybe a third of a step, right? You know, it's not a lot.
I used to argue it was defense, but then he brought that back this year, which blows my mind. It's, right. I mean, it probably helps that he's gets to play facilitator more. He's in kind of empowering Anthony Davis to be that play finisher. But I feel like this kind of engine version of LeBron can go on forever.
Right. So ultimately, what you look at is you're seeing him, you know, and I think the most noticeable part of his loss of athleticism, whatever that is, you know, a third of a step or a quarter of a step, is off the dribble, right? When he tries to break someone down off the dribble, I think that's kind of where you see it. But either way, back to my ultimate point, which is with Anthony Davis, he's got a guy who everyone criticized for saying he doesn't have the killer instinct, right? He doesn't have the clutch gene. By the way, where has LeBron heard all that stuff before, right? So I think that he sees him, even though he's so much younger than him, as an equal, right? And I think he also understands, to your point, Justin, for his own longevity, he needs to elevate him, to get him that confidence. And hitting that shot yesterday, as crazy, or the other day, Sunday, as crazy as it sounds, is a big, like, result of LeBron investing in Anthony Davis. And he's seeing kind of the fruits of the labor now. And I think that Anthony Davis, while he's not LeBron and he doesn't have the skill set, he's not the best player on the planet, he's not the best player on his team, he has moments where he can be, right? And I think that that is the thing that LeBron at this stage of his career has realized. And again, if he wants to extend his career for as long as he, you know, into his 40s, then I think that he needs AD to kind of hit that different gear. And that's where he's at. And I think that's the big difference between LeBron now and in any other stop that he had been previously.
I do, you know, the level to which he's obviously elevated AD is clear. The way he's elevated the rest of this team is clear. I mean, he's playing pretty much as the team's only two-way creator, other than Rajon Rondo. What do you think that this run is going to end up meaning for him in the way we talk about him? Is the legacy secured and it is just extra ammo for Bron stands and that's kind of where we are? Do you feel like you've taken anything extra out of this run from him?
Yeah, look, I know that people roll their eyes when they hear this. And I do think that this stuff gets discussed maybe too much in my line of work is, look, everyone's dealing with the pandemic, right? Like that in itself is challenging, right? But the Kobe thing is a real thing, okay? Let me explain this to you. I live in Los Angeles. My office is right outside Staples Center. I was there coming into work for a week straight to what was a funeral outside of my office every single day. And by the way, the same thing was happening at the Lakers facility, you know, 25 miles away from the arena, okay? Yeah. So that's a real heaviness to deal with, okay? And I don't want to minimize that. I don't think it's the reason. I do think it's kind of serendipitous, though, that they're 3-0 in his uniform that he created. And I do think that there is some serendipitous stuff about that, right? Where it's like the karma is kind of working, the cosmos are working in a certain way. And I do think that that stuff that we can't explain is kind of cool in a way, you know, from a storyline perspective. But I do think there is a real heaviness to that. When you're talking about a guy that he was a competitor against, right, for a long time, who then he became an ally with and was coming to his franchise. I think that there was a lot there to have to deal with. There was already plenty of people here in the city that were like, nah, LeBron, he'll never be Kobe. And I think the way he's navigated this, that part of it, right, mm-hmm. has really – turn some of those people to be like, yeah, LeBron's our guy now. You know what I mean? And I think that there is something to be said about that. But yeah, look, is it 2016? No. Like you break 50 years of what you guys went through as a city, right? You know, and I think that that will live on forever. But I do think that this one is certainly more than just a footnote, right? Because of all the things that he would have had to endure to get there. You know, going back to even last season, right? The injury, dealing with a significant injury for the first time in his career, having to make sure that it worked with Anthony Davis, because Anthony Davis is a free agent this offseason. Yeah. It wasn't a given. Let's not forget that also came off the heels of Kevin Durant saying that role players like to play with LeBron and that stars aren't always, don't always love it as much, right? And look, playing with LeBron isn't easy. I don't think there's any question about that. I think that there are plenty of things that come with it that are great, and there are some challenges that come with it too, particularly for guys who have to subjugate their own game some. Mm-hmm. Chris Bosh has talked about it. Kevin Love clearly has talked about it. We all know about Kyrie. You know, Dwayne did it willingly, but it took sacrifice to do that. And setting aside people's egos, right? So I don't think it's super easy, but LeBron has made it easier, I think, on Anthony Davis than anywhere else, because I think he's – the one thing you can credit LeBron is I feel like he's always, for the most part, right? I know people always mention the decision, but for the most part, man, he kind of is really good at reading the room, you know? And I think he kind of reads the room. I'm getting older. I need a guy who can help me. I can help him in ways he's somewhat deficient, and kind of here we are. So I think all those things that he had to do, whether it's the internal stuff with the Lakers, whether it's Kobe, whether it's the pandemic, whether it's recovering from the injury and kind of proving to people he wasn't done, hashtag washed king, which by the way, nobody said, okay? I will take exception with that. Maybe there were people on Twitter saying it to him, but there was nobody.
You can find anything on Twitter.
Right.
On Twitter. And
there's like,
talking heads that, like, the shows where you have one person that'll take the pro-LeBron side and the anti-LeBron side, which it seems like every network is going to replicate. You'll find it there, but not a lot of legitimate criticism there.
Right. Even Skip Bayless, right, who LeBron once said to me is like his Howard Cosell, right, to Muhammad Ali, where they'll just battle back and forth, because of all the stuff that he says about him. Even he didn't say that, hashtag Washed King. So, which, by the way, I'm sure he's jealous he didn't come up with, to be honest with you. But dealing with all that stuff, it is going to be right up there, I think, with – I would say it's 2016. It's winning the first one because the first one is still pretty damn sweet. Mm-hmm. And, let's not forget they were down 3-2 to the Celtics and the whole blueprint was on the damn line there and the whole thing would have been blown up and they would have been mocked endlessly, even more so than they did the previous year. But I think it is close. I think it's right there with that first one because of all those hurdles that I just outlined.
I think that the biggest thing for me, and I actually kind of discovered this answer as you were giving yours, which is that I also feel like the biggest thing that this season is taking away is that this dude's still the best player in the world.
Yep.
And for the last couple of years, there were some people who were like, in a tight moment, I'd take him, but Giannis is better or Kawhi is better. I'm like, and I've always been kind of, I haven't let go of it yet, but I think we've all come back to agree it's still Bron.
Man, I did it in 2014. I was like, I think KD might have passed.
His back's hurting.
As back injury. Back. I thought okay, he's going to be a little limited physically. And I think
that's Justin invented a washed king in 2014.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, look at that. Let me ask you guys a question. I'm going to flip the script on you. This is what I do to Levitard all the time. All right. I start asking questions. How mad were you guys in 2014 when he took the 2 weeks off to come to Miami?
I wasn't mad.
Worried?
It was at that point that I was like, okay, this kind of is speaking towards what I felt, which was I thought the Cavs didn't get enough credit for, one, having the assets to go get Kevin Love, that Kyrie was part of it. I thought that there was legitimate basketball reasons for going to Cleveland, which I thought got underplayed. And at that point, it was kind of, all right, gun to your head, I'll leave after this year. I know I said that I'm going to take my time and be patient. And that's when it kind of felt like, okay, the letter was a little more marketing. I wasn't necessarily mad because I always kind of felt at that point that the relationship was transactional. But it wasn't something that bothered me. It worried me, especially when he was mouthing to Dwayne Wade that they'd team up again together, which I guess they did.
But, yeah, they did.
Yeah, it didn't make me mad at that point, no.
Yeah, I think I was more just like, fuck. I remember actually, we weren't podcasting yet at the time, but I remember like talking in some closed circles, like, is he done doing chase down blocks? Which is a really funny thing. is that part of his, because remember he was not defending at all and he could not get up and down the floor particularly well that year.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I was more just like, oh, I hope whatever is happening works, because mm-hmm. I felt pretty stressed.
Well, I feel like that's what's actually left to gain for LeBron, is proving that he can age gracefully. And I think he deserves credit for learning from the role he played in the relationship with Kyrie kind of falling apart. Like, I think he's approached this differently, and he wanted that with Kyrie, and there were times that Kyrie wanted that. And I think that him kind of taking a step back, letting AD be kind of the primary scorer, I think that is kind of what he has left to prove in his career. Because aging gracefully and kind of going out like Tim Duncan, still having an impact as you physically decline, that's what really he can, that's the last feather he can kind of put in his cap.
Yeah, Tim Duncan, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, right? Like, there's a couple of guys that certainly were able to do that. It is a testament, though, to the team that he had working with him physically back then. And, David Alexander and Donnie Raymond were the guys who fixed his back, and he started working with them when he was in Miami. Mm-hmm. They were Dwayne's guys. They fixed Dwayne's knees, basically. And, and they kind of retaught him to walk. These guys are amazing. And they're the guys, by the way, who now work with Chris Paul. They've been working with Chris Paul for about a year, and we see how good Chris Paul has looked this particular season. Like, they are really, really good. They work with a lot of professional athletes, and, I know LeBron, I don't know if he still works with them at all anymore, but I know he was definitely working with them in his time in Cleveland for all those years. And mm-hmm. they fixed his back. I mean, there was real concern there with the back at that point. And when he came back to those 2 weeks in Miami, I can tell you this, is that the people in Miami, I'll never forget, I was at a restaurant on Lincoln Road on South Beach, and my phone was blowing up that he was in town. And I was just like, oh no. Like, I was just like, yeah, this would be great. This would be great fodder. I'll give him this too, man. He has provided so much content over his career. I know
your cheat code.
Yeah, I know Levitard talks about this too, but you know, basically it's, there are a handful of guys that I owe my career achievements to, or the heights, for what that's worth. He's absolutely one of them. Because the way that we cover him has changed mine and a lot of people's lives, right?
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, I'm always very thankful for him in that regard. It doesn't change my objectivity, but on a human level, when we can have a human moment, I'm always very courteous to him, because I do think that, you know, he deserves that respect as kind of the face of the game, really. Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't want to take too much more of your time, so we'll wrap up on this. Who is LeBron playing in the finals?
Oh, I think it's going to be the Heat. Okay. I think, look, there's a lot of talk right now about, the Celtics have 4 days off between games or whatever. Gordon Hayward. Yeah. I talked about this earlier. Eric Spoelstra is the best game-to-game adjustment coach I think we have in the NBA right now. And he also benched Jimmy Butler at the end of that game. And just knowing all the people involved there, I feel like that's going to stew and it's going to boil over into what I think will be a good Heat performance early on, which we haven't seen them play well to start games, it seems like, in a while. And I think that there are a couple of things that were easily correctable from that last game. Yeah, I mean, they allowed 60 points in the paint. Like, get out of here. That is not what they do. They also shot 27% from three. And I don't think that is clearly not the norm for them, the second best team shooting threes. So I still think the Heat win. I think the Heat win game four. I think the Celtics win another one. And then I will amend my original pick of Heat in seven to Heat in six at this point. But if the Celtics win, all bets are off except Heat in seven.
I like it. That's going to be a hell of a storyline if that's what ends up happening. I mean, if Miami beats LeBron in the finals, Biscayne Boulevard's just going to be cocaine. Like, that's all it's going to be.
And pots and pans. Don't forget pots and pans. Yes, pots and pans. And by the way, look, you know, I think that no matter what happens, right, like, just getting there, I think that you can make the case it's Eric Spoelstra's best coaching season, right? Just getting this group there. Winning that series would elevate him to a different status and stratosphere, I think, too, because there is the guys we've talked about, right? LeBron, Wade, Bosh. It would look a lot different. And even for Riley, right? Like, I, as much as I love the man, right, I was – on TV yelling and screaming in the summer of 16 and 17 going, I have no idea what they're doing. And I don't know what Pat Riley is thinking. These are not the right moves, you know, in real time. And I'll tell you a quick story that I've told on the radio before. I ran into Pat at Levitard's wedding and we talked for 30 minutes. And in that 30 minute conversation, you know, he didn't come out and say it, but he said, look, you know, we didn't hit on everything. And, you know, luckily for us, we've got a great staff that I work with. And we were able to kind of come out of that and put ourselves in a position to start to compete again. And I think that the one thing that's changed with Riley over the years is not his competitiveness by any stretch of the imagination. I think what Riley has done, kind of like LeBron, which is why, man, those two guys are so similar, right? Like, it is eerie in a lot of ways, because I know that there's been some iciness there over the years, less so, they were both there and they had a nice embrace at Dwayne's last game. But they're the same person in this regard. Pat has, I don't want to say relinquished control, but he was a big time micromanager. And he has allowed his staff, which is great, you know, Eric Spoelstra, Andy Ellisberg, Adam Simon, Shane Battier, those guys, Chet Kammer, to do their job, right? And trusting them that they can help him at this stage, right? Like, you know, Pat at 75 is not a spring chicken anymore. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying that he's not heavily involved in every decision, but he's allowing other people to have voices, similar to LeBron with AD, right? Actively invested in the growth of Anthony Davis. So it is funny that if those two meet, we'll focus on the bitter divorce and the good times and the bad times, but there is a definite storyline about how they've both kind of grown from the people they were over the last several years.
Well, George, this has been fantastic. I mean, we, as I said, we don't want to take up too much of your time. You've been incredibly generous with it. So we really, really do appreciate that. For all our listeners, if you're following us, and not George, right? I don't know what you're doing, but go follow him at Sedano. Check out The Jump. Check out your radio show. Everything you're doing, we just really, really appreciate your time. This has been fantastic. If you want to support the show, the best way you can do so is by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. And if you want to be part of our exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of the review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. Big thanks to George. Thanks to all our listeners. Thanks to Carter. Stay safe out there. And until next time, go Cats.